Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast. This week, it's a post-NAMM rundown, and we're going to be talking about all things NAMM. Unfortunately, there are so many NAMM things that we're not going to be able to fit it into one regular episode of the podcast. So we'll be continuing over on our Patreon. patreon.com/guitar nerds. Get nerdy.
Hello and welcome to the post-NAMM 2019 episode of the Guitar Nerds Podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Mark Packham.
All my freaks, holler if you hear me.
And Jay Cross.
You already look like you're about to throw up.
Yes, I am sick. Still.
Yeah, that honestly, that looked like it took everything out of
you. It was good.
Joe's refusing to go to the doctor. So are there any doctors who listen to the podcast that want to meet Joe Branton?
I will.
We could do it that way around.
No,
instead of you going to the doctor, can we get a doctor to come to you?
Wait, because they're a fan of the podcast. You have to be a top tier Patreon backer.
Yeah.
Only for a month if you want, but you've got to be a Patreon backer. You've got to pay for the privilege of maybe contracting whatever... I don't know, is VD airborne? Can that be?
Who knows?
I don't know how he's... Oh, God.
I don't know. It's going to be fine. I'm going to get well soon. Anyway, it's
get well soon.
NAMM.
All right, Hallmark. Like,
I'm going to get well soon.
Anyway.
This is going to look really bad when he actually dies and we're just laughing about it on the podcast.
Yeah, I could be dying. We don't know.
Well, exactly.
I haven't been to the doctor, so I have no idea. And it's been 3 weeks.
Is there a doctor?
I can barely get out of bed at the moment.
Is there a doctor in the house? And if so, can you come and save Joe Branton?
I reckon it's withdrawal symptoms from GAC.
Withdrawal symptoms from not going to NAMM.
I also haven't been drinking.
Maybe that's what it is.
I think that's what it is.
Maybe it's your body. You're like Lemmy. Couldn't stop.
That's probably what it is.
Lemmy sip over there.
Yeah, Lemmy sip.
I am drinking a Lemmy sip. Anyway, NAMM 2019 has just finished. We've got one of the nerds back. Jay has come back. But Matt Knight is still stuck over there.
I am back, yeah. I saw Matt once in the entire time that I was there.
Yeah.
So I flew out on Sunday night. Today is now Tuesday night. Yeah, so I flew out last Sunday and it was great. It was great. I had a really good time. The first part of the week was fantastic. Are we moving straight into this? Is that what you want me to do? I realize I've sort of just hijacked
just talk
it.
No, yeah, yeah.
I've got literally nothing to talk about.
It is the post-NAMM special, so we should be talking about NAMM.
So I flew out on the Sunday and on the... I think it was the Tuesday. I can't remember what I did on the Monday. I think we just basically recovered. And then on the Tuesday, went and did a tour of the Corona factory again. We all did it together last year.
Yeah.
But this time we were able to go into the custom shop area, which we weren't able to do last year because it was being remodeled. It was being redesigned, put together. So you got to do that, which was fantastic. Met Ron Thorne, who's one of the master builders. He's fairly new.
Yeah, he seemed to be flavor of the month. I will admit to not having heard his name thrown around too much before.
So he's a fairly new master builder. And I think he maybe joined when they remodeled last year, right. I think, possibly.
Is he one of the people that's like qualified from doing the team build stuff, or is he like someone else?
No.
He's come from somewhere else?
No, he has come from, and I'm not 100% sure on the backstory, but my understanding is he was basically a luthier of his own.
Right.
And he joined Fender as a master builder.
Building Fender copies, and you've cut him off at the pass by employing him.
I tell you what, he was absolutely incredible. Really lovely. Like, was quite surprised. I think quite surprised that we knew who he was.
Right.
But I've been following him on Instagram for a while and was really excited to see the guitars that he had made for the show.
It looks like he presented a really interesting custom shop.
Yeah, so there was four main guitars that he put out, and two of which I think were just absolutely incredible. So the first one, of which he did two, was a guitar that he has called the California Special, and it's a totally new shape. Basically something that he designed. He said that when he started making it, he was like, well, this seems quite cool, but was a bit worried that, you know, during the production process, someone would come over to him and say,
that's not a Strat.
That's not a Stratarotelli. What are you doing?
But it is kind of, it's kind of a streamlined, offset-ish. It's quite 80s in its shape. That's sort of when they were trying to make guitars a little small, a little more dinky.
That's right. And actually, the thing that he was also worried about was the fact that the headstock wasn't, exactly dead on. But right. it's quite like the Venus headstocks.
Oh, that's cool.
So that kind of like that kind of weird, bigger,
oversized.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it was absolutely fantastic. If you go to Ron Thorne's Instagram page, you'll probably find it there.
Yeah,
I'm just trying to look for it. Googling.
Because I did see a picture of it when you put it up, but I just want to.
Yeah.
So it also featured a speed stripe, didn't it? It had a speed stripe,
There was two models. There was one that did, and then one that did not, and that both look amazing. So really interesting kind of pickup configuration on these. So you've got the neck pickup in the same position that you would normally have it,
right.
And the bridge pickup is in the same position that you'd normally have it, and then the middle pickup is right down near the bridge pickup.
Oh, okay.
So it looks like basically someone's like split a humbucker. But like physically split the two cores of the humbucker.
That's right.
This looks like the sort of Prince guitar.
It is that kind
setup.
Of pickup configuration, yeah. And if I can remember correctly, the way that the pickup selector works is it goes neck, then neck and then neck and middle. So like no, it didn't do that.
That would be quite standard.
It was a combination of some of the pickups.
It was, but it was basically really weird because there definitely wasn't a neck and middle position because the neck and the middle pickup are so far away from each other.
What is the pickup setter? Is it three way?
It's five.
Oh, it's five.
Yeah, it's five. He said he did look at doing three, but he did look at doing six, but when sort of switching through, you kind of get lost as to where you are.
I mean, five is too many.
Of course, I agree. You just need one. Yeah. You just need one pickup, the bridge.
On a Strat, I agree.
Have you... His Instagram page is absolutely amazing.
It's incredible.
Could you tell the listeners what it is?
Thorn_guitars?
Thorn guitars.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure exactly the story behind this one on here, but it looks like it's a Fender custom shop, but someone external, Van Customs.
Yeah, so this is one of the things that's really interesting about him, is he hooks up with artists. So this hasn't been painted by... I don't think this has been painted by the Fender spray team.
No, this is someone who specialises in metal flakes, Fury Metal Flake.
Right, so that's the thing, is he hooks up with a lot of these people. So one of the... If you go back to his page, one of the other things that was on there is
The woodblock telly.
Yeah, the woodblock telly. So he... And I spoke to the artist because he was there, and he said that the artist is like a... He's does a lot of this kind of... imprinting, like digging in, and
it's like woodblock.
Yeah, Ron Thorne met him at some like metalwork convention or something.
Okay.
And was like, oh, look, I'm a big fan of this. I'm building a guitar. Do you want to be involved? And what they did was, so this guy basically chiseled away on the guitar to get this really elaborate looking finish. And then before they strung it up, before they actually completed the guitar, they then took a print of the negative of the guitar. So they put paint on it,
right?
Then put a piece of paper on it and literally took an imprint. Like you used to do at school with potatoes.
Right, yeah.
I believe it was on that. The Fender Custom Shop Instagram is where I saw it. Yeah, they like roll over with kind of black paint and then put the paper on.
And so those were both on display. Both the guitar and the print were on display. So that was really cool. The other one that I think was just an absolutely incredible story is the Coronado that he did.
Yep.
So, what, Mark, you're looking at the guitar. What do you think about the colour of that Coronado?
Well, it's like Antigua.
Yes, it is. Would you say it's different to any other sort of Antigua you've seen before?
Yeah, it's like lighter. It doesn't really burst.
Okay, so here's an interesting story for you.
Okay.
Ron Thorne was making that guitar. And in the custom shop, he said, look, I would like this to be Antigua, but I'm not really sure how to paint Antigua. I've never done it before. You know, who should I ask? And they said, well, he still works here.
Right.
He still works here. Should we get him to do it?
Mr. Antigua.
And I can't remember his name. It's on Ron Thorne's Instagram. But
Mrs. Antigua?
It's not Antigua, no. But the fella who invented the colour Antigua still works. So that fella still works on the spray booth, and they Amazing. Just went, "Would you mind just doing this as a one off?" As he came, mixed it up, and if you look at the guitar, it looks like no other Antigua I've ever seen. It's so lovely, and I honestly reckon that modern Antiguas, they've been based off of the old guitars, but the old guitars have like changed colour. They, you know, they've gone maybe a bit greeny over time.
Yeah.
It looked amazing. And yeah, this fella mixed it up. He's been working for Fender for over 40 years.
Yeah, so it doesn't actually say his full name here. His name's Andrade. Right. And he's entering or is in his fifth decade as paint mixer at Fender. Right.
There you go.
Wow.
So yeah, absolutely amazing. So that was really, really cool. Get to talk to him. And, you know, we walked around and saw a bunch of the others. And yeah, really, really cool. That was a great trip. And then on Wednesday, we had a load of work to do, so I was busy doing that. Then Thursday, which was and Wednesday evening was the custom shop event,
Dealer custom shop event.
That's right,
For listeners.
So basically, there's something like 400 guitars are made especially for that,
right.
And dealers can walk around and look at the guitars and see them in a way that you wouldn't normally get to see these guitars.
Right.
So there's loads of one-offs, loads of really wild stuff. So I sent you a picture of a load of bass sixes that were all in a line, all in amazing colours.
They looked absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it's an opportunity for the custom shop to kind of just go a little bit wild because dealers can see the guitars in person, whereas that sort of stuff wouldn't normally get specced up.
Right.
And it's a really incredible thing to be at just because of the sheer volume of guitars and sheer bonkersness of how many weird items there are there. It's really cool. And then on Thursday was the first day of the show. I didn't get to do anything. I didn't see anything. I was right. super busy in meetings all day. And then on Friday, it was very much the same, super busy. Right towards the end of the day, I had about 15 minutes by myself, and I decided, right, I'm going to go and find Matt because I hadn't seen him all week. So I thought, right, I'm going to go down there and find him. I went to the boss booth, and it was just so overwhelming.
Every picture that Matt sent me from NAMM this year, which was about three,
yeah,
in comparison to the 100 or so I got from you. Every picture of Matt was just him taking a picture of a huge crowd at the boss booth.
Honestly,
with him pinned at the back. And then a
picture
like,
of him crying.
I'm stuck here.
It was so overwhelming. And what to make things worse, when I got to the booth, they were showing the video on the backdrop of the MS3, which of course is none other than
me,
Polymoth.
Polymoth.
That's the name of that band, isn't it?
Polymoth.
She was on that. She was in the Dandy, I think.
Yeah.
Polo-meth.
Polo-meth. Yeah, that sounds a bit...
Two things that you love.
I love polos.
But yeah, so I went down and saw Matt and he looked absolutely creamed. So I kind of just went in, said hello and then left because he looked like he was about to throw up on me. Just because he said he was just so exhausted. He had been demoing all day, with basically no relief. So I left him alone. But then we actually did see each other on Saturday night, which was cool. Went to the kind of like bowling party that Earthquake Devices and JHS put on.
Didn't have to carry anyone out this year, did you?
I didn't actually. No, didn't have to carry anybody.
Sort of crucifix position. Carry them out.
Lots of people were. That was the first time that I had really got a time to see the rest of the kind of podcast crew. So
that's the pedal. Builders Ball you're referring to?
The Pedal Builders Summit.
Summit or other.
I like saying ball.
The bowling ball.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So there was the guys from 60 Cycle Hum were there, and the Gear Slum, and the Tone Jerks, and...
You can't forget anyone.
There was so many people there.
Wampler?
Pardon me?
Was Brian Wampler there?
I didn't see Brian Wampler, but he might well have been there.
Was Blake there?
Blake was there. Of course.
Tone Mob.
Oh, did you? I wasn't listening.
I don't think I did say Tone Mob. Okay. But yeah, all the gang were there.
I can't remember. All the US ones have the same name virtually.
Yeah, 60 Gear.
60 Gear Slum.
Jerk.
Yeah.
Mob. And they were all there. And it was really cool. But yeah, everyone, believe it or not, and I hate to say this, but everyone was asking after you. Not you, Mark, but
no one cares about me.
They were all asking after you. Just, you know.
Yep.
Completely flabbergasted that you're still alive.
Yeah.
After their one and only interaction with you being last year,
where I drank 2 pints of spirits.
Yes. Yeah. But yeah, everyone was asking after you. It was very nice. Oh, mainly wonderful. they were asking sort of how you manage it,
how do you manage it? How do I manage?
Yeah. I mean, literally, yes. Yeah. What I said is I just try and leave it to Mark because he cares more than I do.
Yeah. I just want him to go to the doctor. You know. It's mainly so that we don't have to pay out anything as guitar nerds. It's like, limited liability
pension.
Company or whatever.
Maybe that's...
Oh, that's good. If we kill him off, then split the money three ways.
Yeah, lovely. So that was really cool. What else did I do? I met Perry Ormsby for the first time.
Is it the first time?
Yeah, it is.
I don't understand.
We've
all got a photo with him.
I didn't see him last year.
Really?
So this is the thing. He was like, we met last year. And I said, no, we didn't. Because when you guys all hung out...
You were working.
I was working.
Of course.
Yeah, it was on the first day, I think, Mr. Perry, and you were well busy.
I was well busy. Yeah, but I tell you what, he said the worst thing anybody's ever said to me. He was so rude to me, like to a point where I had to walk away. Because he said, just as we were leaving, he said, oh, you're about an inch shorter than I thought you were. I was so upset. Nobody has ever...
Accused
me
short.
Of being shorter than they expected me to be. Everyone's always like, oh, crikey, you're... So, no, I'm kidding. It was really, really great to meet him, hang out, and...
He had some
really great guitars. So he went when I went over and said hello to him.
I actually thought it was a bit less... Sorry, I totally interrupted you there. But I thought his lineup was a lot less gimmick-driven this year. Because of course, what they were running on last year was the... what's that YouTuber's name?
Jared Dines.
Jared Dines. The Jared Dines 18 string. And then there was the sort of flying K-shaped guitar that was all tech computery bits.
Well, I mean,
computery bits.
I don't know what you call these things.
I think they've kind of found their niche within the that kind of world, and you know the guitars that were there are, I mean, certainly not my bag. But he was like, "Oh, do you want to see some guitars that you're not going to like?" and it was really cool. But he went, "How about this one? This one's pink," and it was
that
amazing.
Was really nice. Just the bridge humbucker in the sort of it was a fan fret 7-string.
It was and it had that like really the
it was one of the hype models
reverse headstock
with the sharks.
Yes, headstock. Yeah.
It was really nice.
So that was really cool. And oh, the sharks one, that was something totally different. That was also cool. I've got a picture of that somewhere. Where is it?
He also announced 2 new signature artists.
Yes,
which is really cool.
Yep.
Who was it?
I can tell you, mate. Metal guys.
2 metalers. We don't know who they are.
Has this one been announced, or did he tell me this in... This is fine. Yeah, Dino Cazares is...
The problem with Perry is he messages us all his...
I know. I'm not sure whether it's...
I don't know if this is something I've read or something I've been texted.
Exactly.
We shouldn't say anything, so we might get in trouble.
No, it's fine. I've just Googled this, and there's a press release about it. So he signed Dino Cazares from Fear Factory, who previously was with Ibanez.
Yep.
And also, I think, has his own guitar brand.
No
idea. I think Dino does. Yeah, I think there's maybe not guitars, maybe amp. I think that he does something of his own back, but I saw him walking around.
He was the face of the Ibanez Lo-Fi series, or right, Lo-Fi 7 pedal,
right, okay,
which is a classic.
But yeah, it was great to finally meet Perry. There were so many people who kind of, you know through the internet and interact with through the podcast or through the group. And it was really cool to finally meet him.
Yeah. Let's do people that you met.
Yeah, okay. So I bumped into Mike Matthews from Electroharmonix.
Stole some ideas for the new Fender pedals.
That's right, yeah. So
what an absolute hero.
We're gonna make one compressor, then we're gonna make another compressor, and then we're gonna make another compressor.
Then a bass compressor.
And then deluxe compressor.
So that was really cool. Meeting Mike Matthews. He had this huge cigar.
Every photo from every day I've seen of him is just him with a slightly more chewed up cigar.
Yeah, surely you can't smoke the cigar indoors.
No, he wasn't smoking
it.
He just chews them. Yeah. I bite it, I don't light it, as Will Smith once said.
God.
So that was cool. Who else was there knocking about? I spent some time with Dan Hawkins from The Darkness.
Oh, really?
So he was there with Marshall, and he's good friends with Matt, one of the guys that I work with. So we walked the floor with him for a bit.
He was one of the guests at last year's Birmingham Guitar Show, is that right?
Oh, okay. Yeah. But Dan was really, really cool, really, really nice bloke. We walked the floor with him for a bit, looking at all the weird kind of studio effects gear that I just don't really have any understanding of. But he was there with Marshall because he was playing guitar. He was playing guitar, I think, twice a day, demoing their new studio range.
I feel like we should maybe tie in some of the products just to make sure that we don't. That was what I was subtly doing.
I was going to say, we're going to go over the products. We've kind of got a list of things to talk about.
Yeah.
Just before we move on from Dan Hawkins.
Yeah.
The picture that you took of him in front of the giant Ampeg stack. Yeah. Can we talk about the giant Ampeg stack?
Yes. Oh. So, it's the 50th anniversary of the SVT this year. And that in itself is mad.
Yeah.
When you think that it's still the best bass amp.
Totally. It's crazy.
And it was made 50 years ago. That's outrageous.
It's mad.
Why has no one managed to make a better bass amp yet?
Well, I mean, certainly nothing more iconic.
Yeah.
It's just, it's absolutely crazy. So they were there with the 11-foot cab.
Yes.
So
what was in the cab?
I think we were looking at it and it was difficult to tell, but I think it was a 32 by 10.
Oh, it wasn't like an 818 or something like that?
No, it was 30, or maybe it was 18. 18 10s or 32
18
10s.
18 would make sense. Well,
would it?
Would it? Who knows?
How many across was it?
I don't know. Four, I think.
Okay.
Or maybe it was three. I've got a picture somewhere. I don't know. I kind of got a little bit awestruck when it's in front of me. I was worried it was going to fall over.
It's like the monolith from 2001.
It really is. It really is just like that. But basically, so they had this thing on display in the Yamaha center, the Yamaha convention, basically, because they kind of have their own center.
They hire out an entire hotel lobby and the rooms around it rather than having, or as well as having areas.
So I went in there and saw the Helix, and so they had a pink Helix on display.
They had a load of new colours, didn't they? And they were, it's such a shame they were limited edition for NAMM. I was like, you literally do this. Like,
oh, is that what it was? I didn't realise that.
Yeah, you could win one.
You could win a colour of your choice.
I think they did the same sort of thing last year with the Shurikens.
Right, okay.
That's why you had a load of Shurikens.
But they did loads of new colours on Shuriken again this year.
I think they also took a vote last year, so you could put a little piece of paper in a box saying what your favourite colour was, and they put the top three into production. Unfortunately, people are tasteless, so the best one didn't actually make it into production, I don't think.
Right, okay.
Which was the cool lime green one from last year.
Right, yeah, okay.
I'm pretty sure that one didn't make it into production. But
I went around there, saw all that stuff, but the big event that Yamaha were doing was they, to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the SVT, they had maybe the most iconic bass player of all time, Derek Smalls from Spinal Tap,
yes,
come out and play Big Bottom.
Of course.
And it was... it was advertised as, oh yeah, you know, it's going to be this big thing with Derek Smalls. And I was like, okay, cool, this will be fun. And basically what happened was Derek Smalls plugged into this just gigantic bass amp, and then he got someone out, and I couldn't see who it was, someone out to sing, and then he played the bass line, and someone sang
right.
Big Bottom, and everyone else was singing along and stuff. But the problem was they weren't on a stage, so everyone was just on the floor, and there was
he's quite a small guy.
There was like, I don't know, 200 people or something there watching him, but they couldn't have had a stage because the ceiling was so low in the hotel lobby that they wouldn't have been able to get the amp onto the stage.
Amazing.
I saw that the head itself was nearly touching the
ceiling. It was bonkers. It had to be in the hotel lobby because they weren't able to get it through a door or anything. It only just fit.
Absolutely incredible.
It was really, really funny. So we did that, and then got this picture of Dan in front of the Ampeg, and I got a picture in front of there as well. It was really cool. A really nice little bit of marketing. Nice touch there to get people out photographing everything. Went into their room and had a look at I can't remember the name of the series of guitars, but that we've talked about it before. These guitars that have got the acoustic guitars that have got like chorus and
trans acoustic,
chorus and reverb built in. Really weird.
Yeah, I really like those guitars. So we got a chance to really go and have a me and Matt had a chance to go and have a really in depth look at them last year when we were at NAMM. And I think they sound fantastic. It's the sort of idea that's really weird. And actually, I think they did quite well for us when they initially came out in our Gear of the Year.
Yeah.
But it's a weird idea that surprisingly works really well. And the new guitars in this range are really cool.
Aren't they just doing classicals? Is that...
It's like a half classical, half not classical. I think it's like a steel strung classical looking.
Okay. Interesting. I wonder if it needs to be steel strings for the things to work.
I'm actually not 100% on that. That is what someone said to me, but that person isn't incredibly knowledgeable.
Okay, fine. Well, like us. Yeah. So, yeah, fits in. So,
yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, saw that and then ended up accidentally in the section where the, like, pianos and flutes and...
Oh dear!
And trumpets were, and it all got a little bit too classy for me, so I had to leave and get back to the rock and roll guitars. What else did I see that I liked?
Shall we talk about some other acoustics?
Yes.
Oh wait, you didn't meet. Yeah, I guess we could talk about other people you meet before we go on to that.
I didn't meet Ed Sheeran, if that's what you're trying to lead on to. No, I didn't meet Ed Sheeran, but actually, this Loudon thing I think is really interesting to talk about.
Why don't we segue into the news first, and then we'll do a full rundown of
this. This is all kind of
an all
bit of a...
Well, this
all
is who Jay met.
Thing.
This is Jay's experience of NAMM.
Fine. Here's the jingle. News. Right, now we've had the jingle... Let's talk about Loudon.
I agree. The jingles are stupid and we shouldn't do them anymore, right. Joe. That's what you're saying there, right?
No, that's not what I was saying.
It's all right. It's on silent now. It is on airplane. It's just I've got Wi-Fi on as well.
Oh, okay.
Right. So this Loudon thing I think is really interesting and something for us to talk about. So it was announced on the first day of NAMM that Ed Sheeran was bringing out his own range of acoustic guitars under the Sheeran name. And we were talking about this over breakfast just before we head to the show. And my basic opinion on it was, this is a bit of a shame because those Martin guitars have been really good. And basically it looks like what Ed Sheeran has done is he's worked out that people are buying the guitars because it's him and not because they're Martins and really good guitars.
He's doing a bit of an Abassi.
And what he's going to do is he's just found a company in China who's going to make Sheeran branded guitars, and they're not going to be very good, but he's going to make loads of money on it. And let me tell you, I could not have been more wrong about all of it.
Because it's not China.
It's Northern Ireland, right? So the guitars are built in Northern Ireland in the same place where all the other Loudon guitars are built.
Yeah.
They are about $900, I think, is the price that they said. So they're more expensive than the LX1Es.
Yeah.
But it's still a fantastic... it's still not like bank-breaking money, basically.
And they're losing the guff. Is that right? They're losing the weird logos that he has on
his. Well, the weird logos They came later, didn't they? They weren't on the...
No, they were on all of them.
Were they? Okay, yeah. Right.
It's always the logo of whatever album he's releasing at that time.
I guess the point of those is to differentiate them from just a standard LX1, because they were basically an LX1.
Yes, but... I guess you're right in that state. But these actually looked very tasteful.
Yeah, they were. So, and the story was really interesting. And so we were speaking with... We actually got passed around the houses at Loudon, talking to people from all parts of their... Basically, family, because it's like a family-run company.
Oh, cool.
So we started off by talking with the guy who's the sales manager and one of the top luthiers there, and then went over to talking to one of the other guys whose job I'm not sure what he did, but he basically had done everything during his time there. Then we started talking to George Loudon's son, whose name I think was Johnny. I think. Basically talked to everyone, and they were so lovely, and that they actually. Said, look, and they knew we were Fender because I was there with the Fender guys, and they were like, look, if you guys want to come over, if you're ever in the area, if you want to come and get a tour of the factory, you're more than welcome. They were so lovely. But anyway, I think it's okay for me to tell this story. I'm sure it's no problem. Basically, what they said was Snow Patrol, who are Loudon artists,
right,
had said to Loudon, can you make a guitar for Ed Sheeran? We want to give him a gift. Can you make a smaller guitar like his Martin? And they said, yeah, no problem. They made it, took it to Ed Sheeran, and he loved it. He absolutely loved it. And he said, this is amazing. I'd like to buy a load more, please. Can you make me a load more? And he bought a load more guitars off of them. And then somewhere down the line, they ended up saying, well, look, why don't we, you know, make something of this? Why don't we carry on? Let's see what happens. And so the whole thing has been kind of a joint venture between Loudon and
quite
Ed
remarkable
Sheeran.
To see probably the biggest acoustic artist in the world leave the biggest acoustic company.
So not only that, but the fact that it was able to, the whole thing was kept, no information leaked whatsoever, nothing at all. And on the first day of NAMM, on the Wednesday, the day before, because it was the same night as the custom shop event.
Right.
Loudon had invited all of their UK dealers to an event, and they said, look, we've got something a bit special going on. We've got a launch night going, just a bit of a party. Would you like to come along? And so, a lot of the big guitar, sort of, you know, all of the big Loudon dealers were there. I know that Peach were there, and I think maybe Guitar. There was a couple of the ones who've got like quite a big social media presence. And basically, they came out. Sorry, that wasn't a cuss, Joe. That really wasn't a cuss.
Joe wasn't there.
That really wasn't a cuss. I say that because it ended up, the photos ended up going a bit viral. Yeah. That's what I mean. But yeah, they said, oh, you know, we're gonna have this launch night. Do you want to come check it out? And they didn't tell anyone what was going on. And they had a little video that played. There was, you know, drinks and that. Got everyone to sit down. They played a video showing off all of the history of Loudon. And then it kind of stepped up a notch. And then there was a flash of a picture. And it's like, oh, was that? There's a ginger fella. What's going on there? And then, like, you know, the guitar come out. And then Ed Sheeran walks out. Ed Sheeran himself walks out playing a guitar and plays a bunch of songs. And then they just stopped and they talked about the fact that they were launching a new series. And yeah, he was there to celebrate it. And apparently he is absolutely incredible.
I wish they'd called them Loudons, though.
Well, I mean, it kind of makes sense, I think, because the Loudons, the rest of the Loudon, the most of the Loudon catalogue is pretty expensive.
Right.
You know, it's...
What's the price point on these?
I think they're $900 was what they said.
Okay, so not like ridiculous money.
No, not at all. So it was, it seems really interesting and a cool partnership. So I'm really excited to see what happens with this. I think it's cool and, by all accounts, he's really nice. And, you know, it's really refreshing to see people not just, you know, going down, not going for the lowest possible denominator. But what I think will also be interesting is to see whether Loudon can cope with the demand. Because
I mean, the price point's higher, which a lot of Ed Sheeran fans will probably have already bought an LX1.
That's true, but there's not many, you know, it's basically a custom shop. There's not many of them that work there.
Yeah, that's going to be the difference in the guitars, isn't it?
Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see what happens with that. But it was really cool, really interesting. Yeah. And, they were obviously so excited about the whole thing and really, really, just really excited to be involved in that project. It was cool to see him get so excited by it.
Super cool. Now, just to give you a slight rest, because I appreciate we're relying on you for sort of 100% of the information.
Our man in the field.
I think we should talk about one of the other really cool releases from NAMM. Marshall have announced their new studio series. Mark Beckham.
Are you going to jump in and talk about this?
Well, I can jump in and talk about this as well.
Why don't I give you say what they are, and then we've had a bit of a kind of love-hate relationship with recent Marshall releases on this podcast. In that, I think we have always felt like we love Marshall, and I've talked a lot about DSL 50 being probably my favorite amp of all time.
Yeah.
But in recent years, I think we've all been a little bit underwhelmed by things that Marshall have done. We didn't particularly get on with the Code series. And I just think, when we talk about amps that we're excited about, Marshall don't often come into the conversation. But they've obviously been listening to this very podcast, because this year at NAMM, they've upped the game by announcing the Studio series. So, 6 amplifiers based on classics from Marshall's past.
Although one of them, or sort of 2 of them, if we count the combo and header separate, is part of an existing lineup, is just being rebadged.
Yeah, sure. So they all now belong in the Studio series. So what you've got is the Studio Classic, which is based on JCM 800. You've got head and combo options.
And what makes them different from the JCM?
They are 20 watts, so they're nice and small. Is that not the only difference?
Yes, and the combo's got a 10-inch speaker. Yeah. So, yeah, that's those are the 2 main ones. That's what I meant. It's based on the JCM. But, yes, that's what the fundamental thing about the Studio line is, that they are 20 watts, which is what everyone wants in a gigging amp at the moment. And the combo is actually a 10-inch speaker. But really interesting, they talk about the 10-inch speaker as they blind tested and chose this.
Oh, wow.
Expecting to choose a 12. So whilst, people might be like, it's not a 12-inch speaker, they would have if it had sounded better. But on a blind test, they chose the 10.
That kind of makes sense, because particularly on the 800, I listened to the demos and the drive sound sounded really focused, really punchy.
Well, that's what they said. It was said the 10-inch was capable of replicating more that sort of 412, 100-watt thing than
a single 12.
Yeah. It also explains why the clean sounded perhaps a tad brittle on the 800. But if you're buying an 800, you're not buying it for the clean, are you?
Yeah,
you're buying
it
for the super drive. So so there's the Studio Classic SC20 C and H for the cab and head combo and head versions. That's based on the 800. There's the Studio.
They do a matching cab for all of these as well.
Oh, do they? Okay.
So
fine.
Well, there's a 1x12 cab, I think.
Is a 12.
And then there's a 1x12 cab, or there's a vertical 2x12.
Yes, there is.
Which looks really classy, by the way. Indeed. Especially in the vintage. Sorry to jump ahead, but especially in the vintage range.
Yep. They are also, there's also a 412 available as well. So in the middle, you've got the Studio Vintage SV20C and SV20H, based on a 59 Super Lead Plexi. So more of a kind of
the best one,
as the name suggests. Plexi. As the name suggests, more vintage. I had a list of the demos. This is the one that impressed me the most, I think.
Oh, this is who doesn't want, who hasn't been absolutely gagging for a 20 watt Plexi forever?
Yeah.
This sounded fantastic. So this was primarily what Dan Hawkins was there to demo. And I mean, he's just the perfect guitar player for that, because it's that kind of,
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Classic 60s rock sound.
Yeah.
It sounded great. It sounded really good. I went in there kind of expecting it to be like, okay, well, we'll see what happens. But it sounded quality. Really, really good.
Rounding out the series, you've got the Studio Jubilee 2525C or 2525H.
Which already existed.
Yeah, I think that's they've just pulled
they tested built, the water with that
they've
one.
Yeah, pulled that series all together, haven't they? Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, that's now called the Studio Jubilee, when it was called, what, the Mini Jubilee before or something?
Like, yeah, maybe.
But really cool. All of them have got pretty useful attenuation on them as well.
Yep, yep. So yeah, you've got 20 watts down to, do you know, I don't have the spec here actually, but they drop down in volume.
Yeah,
in
something very output. Usable. I can't
down
remember
to
exactly.
One half, I think.
Is something, yeah. is something usable, and I can't remember if there's some, there's either like a USB out or a direct out. One
yeah,
of
I think there's a direct out. I don't think it's USB, I think it's direct
right,
out.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I am going to listen to the SV20C because I'm looking for a new amp for home. So.
I mean, I think these are absolutely on the
might
money.
Still
fantastic.
Be too loud. Might still be too loud.
They're okay money as well. I can't remember exactly what
they were. I've only got the dollar price here. They're coming in at about $1,400. Okay. $1,499 for the combos.
So it is on the expensive side of a 20 watt amp, but still more affordable and more giggable than buying a 59 Super Lead.
Definitely.
Another thing that Marshall had on display that wasn't really NAMM news but was very cool was they had maybe 5 or 6 or 7 amps that were designed specifically for the show, and they were like really weird kind of experimental pieces
right.
that they had brought along to and invited people to a blind auction basically, and all the money was going to go to some sort of charity, I don't right. know what, but these amps were all like really, really mad. They were kind of like weird 60s avant-garde architecture, or what's the down at Brighton, there's that, what's that style of art that's like
Art Deco,
yeah, exactly. It was all like weird Art Deco stuff.
Wow.
Really, really weird. I don't think I got any pictures, but there was some totally bonkers stuff there. And I was like, oh, you know, what was the deal with this? Was it, you know, and they made it all in-house. And it was, yeah, literally, and I said like, oh, is this done as a kind of showcase to show what the custom shop can do? And they were like, I mean, we'll have a go, but like,
these
they,
are for this.
They won't be very happy if you ask them to make another right. one of these, but it was cool. And yeah, like I say, all the money went to charity, and it was
great.
Yeah, it was very, very cool. Neat little. And I said, well, you know, what's going on here? Are they 110 or are they 240? And they were like, yeah, well, they are 110 because we're in America, but if we
could sort it out.
If a British dealer won these, then, you know, we would swap them to make it 240, you know, right. It's fine. So yeah, Marshall was cool. It was a good booth. It was
oh,
a good
wow,
booth.
Sweet. Excellent. Glad to see Marshall firing on all cylinders.
Oh, and I know that you, sorry to jump in ahead here, but just talking about the, you know, the big brands. I know that you talked about Gibson in last week's Patreon.
Yeah.
But I went to their booth as well, and it was, honestly, it was chocker. There were so many people there.
And loads of guitars.
Loads yeah. of guitars.
And the fact that JC Curley himself made an appearance and everything. I
yeah.
think that's really cool.
Yeah, 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 yeah. So there was loads of guitars there. You could try anything you wanted. So they had everything from the you know, the custom shop historic range through to kind of experimental 335s and all the Epiphones. So like the Lizzie Hale, which I hadn't seen. Yeah. Until then, they had a load of Steinbergers as well, which was a load of Steinbergers and Kramers, which
yeah,
I thought
that's
was mad.
Yeah, there's some cool Kramers there.
Yeah, so that was all really weird.
I mean, it all looked great. It was a fantastic range of guitars. I'm very, very excited about the rest of this year.
So what was interesting was the way they laid out their booth was basically when you walked in, you got a punch card. You got like a time card.
Right.
And they had 5 or 6 different stations where you would go around, and they had someone who was an expert in each field of making a guitar who taught you through the different processes involved in building a guitar. And when you finished talking to them, when you finished like watching their presentation, you got they stamped your card.
So you could never go and bother them again.
Well, yeah, that was it. No. So at the end, once you'd seen all 5 or 6 demos, you then would go back, hand in your card, and then one person would win a guitar.
Oh, nice.
So a really good way of doing it. And I didn't have time to do the whole thing, of course, but I saw there was someone there talking about winding pickups, and I found that quite interesting. So I went there, and he had a pickup winding machine, and he just wound a P90 in front of us. And it was really, really, really interesting. And he That's said that, you know, cool. even since the 40s, it's all been kind of automatic. It's that it's not, someone's not had to sit there and count, you know, 9,444, 9,445. You know, it's there's a machine that sort of ticks it over and counts it. But they, you know, someone has to watch it to make sure it's all and make sure it's even because the machine can't properly do it. And it was really fascinating, very, very. But honestly, the booth was just rammed.
I think
they could have done with having fewer guitars there. And I realize that people will say, well, that's not the point. The point is to go there and try stuff. But it was overwhelming.
Yeah.
There were so many people. And it might just be the time that I went, but it was bonkers.
Wow.
Absolutely bonkers. You just couldn't move.
Good to see them back.
Totally.
So easy. All the things that we said they should do, they're doing. And it seems to be working out.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. What more can you ask?
We should talk about some effects pedals because there have been a lot of cool effects pedals. Jay, why don't you start us off with Fender's new
additions? Yeah, we haven't even started. I mean, could do a whole podcast on.
I mean, we literally could. Fender have maybe released what might be my favorite effect of 2019.
Oh, I just mean like with everything else that Fender have released. But I'm talking about the effects pedals. So there was six released at NAMM last year, further three released at Summer NAMM, and then another six that were released this week at NAMM.
This is now a massive lineup. Is this like the biggest effects lineup Fender have ever had?
Absolutely it is. So out of the pedals that were released this week, there were, you're going to test me now because this is my job now, actually talking about this stuff. So the Downtown Express, which is a all-in-one kind of fly rig bass solution. So overdrive.
Oh, that's a bass one,
is it? It is a bass one. Yeah. So overdrive, compression, and separate switches for overdrive, compression, EQ, and then a mute.
I don't know what the. Yeah, okay, fine.
What, go on.
I don't know why you'd want a mute. Like, most people have a tuner for that.
But what if you don't?
Yeah.
Who doesn't? I mean, have a some tuner people. Some. Mute?
Well, a lot of people, if you're using that kind of all in one. So if it's like an all-in-one fly rig solution, it's there so that, you know, you can just quickly mute it and tune up.
Yeah, I
and,
guess so.
You know.
Yeah, fair enough.
So what's really interesting with it, there's a couple of neat little features. You can swap the position of the compression and the drive. So swap the routing of those.
That's cool.
Also, there's a direct out, so you can just go straight to the PA, but you can choose where in the chain the direct out is. So you can have it come in before the effects or just before the EQ. So if you just want to send your EQ to your amp and have the, you know, just the compressor and the drive going through to the front of house. I thought that was really, really neat.
Really
cool all-in-one kind of fly rig solution.
And the biggest pedal.
The biggest one out of the lot. Yeah, absolutely. So that's the only one that takes away, that moves away from that kind of big, that kind of standard form factor that we've put together. So there's that. There's let's go in reverse order and we'll talk about the modulations last because that's what Joe's chomping at the bit about. So there's a new drive pedal, which is the MTG distortion. Which has got a
tube distortion.
Yeah, so it's got a 6205 micro NOS tube actually in there to give you a bit of that kind of like gritty distortion that you get from amps, blah, blah, blah.
It's got a built-in boost.
It does have a built-in boost, and you can use the boost either as just a signal boost, or you can use it to boost the gain, depending on how you set it up, so you can get kind of like a two-channel gain out of it. Co-designed by Bruce Egnator. So
really?
Oh, that's interesting.
Cool. Yeah. So he, in the same way that the base station, as well as the Santa Ana, one of the pedals that was launched last year, were co-designed by Alex Aguilar. So,
oh wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, so this is co-designed by Bruce Egnator, which is really cool.
Cool.
Because I don't really know that Egnator are doing a huge amount at the moment.
I don't know, actually. Don't know. I didn't see anything come out of NAMM, so
no.
Who knows?
Well, he's been, probably because he's been locked in a dungeon in Corona.
Yeah.
Finishing off the MTG. So there was that, and then three new modulation pedals. So a chorus, which is the bubbler, the Lost Highway phaser, and the pinwheel, which is a spinning speaker emulator.
Yes, the pinwheel is what I am excited about.
So all three of these are set up fairly similar in that you have got two rates and two depths.
Yeah.
And you're able to switch between...
With a second foot switch, which is exactly what I want from a rotary.
Absolutely. So you're able to switch between the two, but...
As you would on an organ.
But you also have a sensitivity control there built in, which allows you to automatically, so you can set basically a threshold, and depending on how hard you play, it will automatically switch from one to the other.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. That's so cool. It's, does it have an expression in?
It also has an expression in, so that you, if you want to control it with it, with that, you can do that. There's and there's a break. If you hold down the second on, so only on the pinwheel. When you're on the, if you hold down the second switch, it acts as a brake, and that will bring that will bring it slowly to a complete stop, and then you just kick it back in again, and it will go back to the slow setting.
This is a really
product. Both those. I love the bubbler, like and Mark's
such a good name.
It is a great name. Mark's favorite effect, the chorus.
Of course, love it.
Absolutely,
I mean,
love it.
The name. Hate the effect.
It is. It's a great name. Bubbler chorus. Really, really cool. But yeah, all three of those are absolutely amazing. And then the final pedal that came out is the tree verb, which, believe it or not, is a tree.
Right. It's an overdrive with a real sort of woody tone.
That's right. Really, really earthy, lovely tone.
Woody.
So it's a tremolo on one side and a reverb on the other side. So on the tremolo side, you've got three different effects you can choose from. Same on the reverb. And you can switch the order if you want to do that.
Right.
The only big difference between those and the previous range of effects is actually none of them can take a battery. So they don't have that flip down battery compartment.
Right.
They're all super thirsty.
Okay.
Really, really thirsty. So
just
the,
like everyone at the end of a day at NAMM.
Oh yeah, like me now actually also. But the, so the Downtown Express and the Treverb are like 310 milliamps or something.
Right.
And then the modulation effects are all like 200 or something. So it's, okay. So there was just no point in putting a battery in there, just because it's like,
yeah,
it would just drain it immediately. So yeah, really cool. And it was really cool being on the booth and seeing people come up and kind of expect the pedals to be underwhelming, because that's still the uphill battle that Fender is facing, due to the last couple of batches of pedals being kind of underwhelming. Not of this series, but, you know, pedals from
the competition series
that came out, you know, 10 years ago, and the OEM stuff that came out. It was all just a bit pony.
Yeah.
And this stuff is all designed in-house by this guy, Stan Cote, who has been a designer at Fender for a really long time. And he's kind of doing it in his spare time, like around his other jobs. And just what's coming out is amazing. It's really, really amazing.
So speaking about reverb.
Hello, I work for Reverb.
Well, no, that was...
I don't...
That wasn't at all the segue.
Fine. I don't know what you're going to ask me to talk about. You're looking at me.
No, I was going to talk about something.
Can I talk about something before we go off? Well,
no,
this something...
is ruining my segue.
Right, well, do your thing. There's something I really want to talk about before we go.
Yeah, we'll talk
before
about
we finish
that afterwards.
The hour.
Yeah, it's fine. We're going to run a little bit over with this. It's the NAMM special, the post-NAMM special. Anyway, speaking of reverb, do you know what makes a really good reverb sound?
Spring.
Yes. What if... Oh, I don't know where I'm going with this. Anasounds have actually released reverb springs for your pedal board.
This is incredible.
So Anasounds are a French effects company. We've spoken about them quite a bit in the past. They're the often bamboo-topped, sort of wooden-looking, very, very stylish, chic, modern-looking pedals, all sort of with laser etching designs on them. They have introduced three different sizes of pedal board reverb tanks springs.
This is bonkers plus great.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So they've released Le Bon, Le Brut, and Le Truand.
Excuse me,
that's what they are. Le Bon, Le Brut, and Le Truand. The Le Bon is the smallest one, which is kind of almost effects pedal size, so you can keep that on top of your pedal board, as it's roughly the same size. The Le Brut is their medium sized one, which apparently is really cool and can be a bit crazier because of its longer size. You can still fit it. They recommend maybe at the top, at the back of the pedal board, but a long, you know, long ways. And then they have the Le Truand, which is completely massive. I don't know quite what you'd do with it. Unless you have
it on
like
top of your amp, surely.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess that's what you do. And apparently that one's capable of absolute madness. But we're getting one. They're sending one over for us.
Nice. What did you go for?
The medium-sized one.
I think that's best. For people listening to this podcast, that's probably best, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Because the short one, you kind of know what it's probably going to do. The medium one, you could still fit on your board and create some reverb wackiness. Yeah. The big one, probably most people aren't going to use.
Super unwieldy. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It would still be super cool, but yeah, I think the medium one's a good example of everything. But, you know, we're still yet to hear them. Alexander announced them at NAMM and had them there, but I don't think...
Alexander, you mean?
That's his name.
Oh, I thought, yeah, okay, fine, that makes
from
sense.
Anna Sounds. But,
I thought you meant Alexander Pedals. All right, now. You're talking about the wrong company.
Yeah, they announced these at NAMM, but I don't think, Jay, you didn't have a chance to pop over to Anna Sounds.
No, I did not. No. I was so busy, and the only time really I had any chance to do any running around was on the Sunday, and I just, there was so much to do.
Okay, yeah, but we will check them out. They should be here in like a week or two, so
nice.
We'll get back to you on that. But yeah, anasounds.com if you want to check out the pedals in the meantime, listener. They look super duper cool. Mark Packham, you want to talk about something that's going to interrupt our sort of effects pedals?
Yeah, I want to talk about some guitars, actually.
Right, okay.
Probably the best guitar released at NAMM this year. So we've talked in the past about how good Reverend guitars are.
How did I know? Do you know what? I was actually going to remove this from the list.
No,
I was like,
so good, though.
I was looking at the list, looking at the time, and I was like, wow, all the other stuff is more interesting than
no,
this.
No,
it.
Go wrong, on then. Go wrong. On then. Wrong. So we've talked about how good Reverend guitars are, how well they're made, what they offer, and generally how good the setups are. We talked about the Billy Corgan guitar being a fantastic playing guitar,
yeah,
even if it wasn't to everyone's taste. It, you know, for me, playability wise is up there with some custom shop guitars that I've tried, but they're all under a grand. So brand new guitars from Reverend this year. The first one, well, two signature models and a new take on one of their existing models. The first one is the Greg Koch signature model, the Gristle Master. So what this is kind of a Tele style guitar.
This is a real,
I guess,
move away from the Reverend shape.
Yeah. So they've done two things with Tele style guitars this year. The first one is the Greg Koch signature, which is a Tele shaped guitar, but with that kind of almost Firebird esque ridge down the middle.
It's got a lot of real sort of early 50s or sort of the late, the like 49 Tele prototype.
Exactly,
look
that
to it.
Yeah.
It reminds me a bit of the Cabernita style scratch.
Definitely.
Plate.
They've sort of, yeah, mashed in kind of, yeah, early Tele prototype stuff, like Snakehead Tele stuff. They've mashed in Thunderbird. Obviously, they've got, you know, the Baked Maple that you get necks and board that you get on Reverend guitars. It's a Carina body, believe it or not. So it's potentially a bit darker than your standard Tele sound. I think it is super, super cool.
Great.
They're offering it in some like kind of retro colours.
Yeah,
so you've
what
got
the colours. The only one I've seen is the red, which I normally like that sort of red, but it was maybe a bit much.
Wow, red, I believe, is the colour that you're talking about.
Wow, red,
and
really?
It's like that's a real postbox red.
Completely
or,
that.
Or for Americans, a real, oh God, I don't know what the American alternative of postbox red is.
London bus red.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
No, roughly.
It's that. So you've got Wow red, Pow yellow. Which is like a butterscotch kind of see-through to the grain.
Now, that's much nicer. That's much more tasteful.
Traditional,
I disagree. I think the red looks better.
You like the red?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And in the middle, Blucifer, which is basically a kind of Daphne Blue style.
It's a bit more duck eggy, or am I just seeing your computer at an angle?
You're seeing it at an angle. But they're all top-bound. So you've got, top-bound binding on the front, no binding on the back. But the back and sides are matching. Because that's one thing that I've not really liked on some of the Reverend guitars, where they do like, they did a Tele shape before, and I can't remember, it was a signature model for someone. I think the Pete Anderson signature, that was like sparkle top, but then natural back and sides, and it just looked a bit funky for my taste, looked a bit weird. Whereas these are matching. So this looks incredible.
This looks fantastic. What sort of money are they coming in at?
Don't know yet. I haven't got that here.
Because if this is affordable, then I really think this is a gorgeous, like, if you want a Telecaster that's got something different, and you know, you're partial to your retro 50s styling, I think this is You know it's going to be extraordinarily high quality.
They are $12.99, so they're a little bit more expensive than the the Reverend range. That's
BP.
GBP. That's pound notes. But if you're a telly fan, and I'm guessing you don't want to spend, if you don't want to spend that much, I need to confirm the price on this one. But they have released the Trick Shot, which is on the regular Charger body shape, which is the the shape that they use for most of the Reverend guitars. It's very similar to the guitars like the Buckshot that they've done in the past, but it's all exact kind of Tele spec. So you've got Tele pickup, bridge and neck. You've got a Fender style Tele bridge, like a modern style Tele bridge. But you still get all the things that are great about Reverend guitars. So you still get the baked maple neck, and you get their bass contour. It's kind of like very deluxe Tele, very modern features on a Tele style guitar. Again, Carina body, so might give you a slightly different sound to your regular Tele. I'm just having a look to see if I can find colors on that. Let's have a look. Is the Trick Shot on the website yet? Doesn't look. Oh, yes, it is. Trick Shot. Okay, so we've got color wise natural, which is the butterscotch blonde, metallic alpine. Which is a green, like a light green metallic.
Yeah.
And then burnt brick, which is a metallic red.
Really cool guitars. I mean, it's kind of, to be honest, that one is a bit more of the same from Reverend, but still sort of they're punting out fantastic quality with unique enough classic looking body shapes that if you're looking for something different, I think.
Well, the thing is, for me, what they haven't done before is, they haven't had, and why I've kind of held off buying one despite talking about buying a Reverend for a while, is they've not actually done a Tele spec guitar. So they've never done a guitar with two Tele pickups in it. And the guitars that they've done that are close to that, so things like the Buckshot, which have been Tele bridge and Gretsch style in the neck, have been tunematic tailpieces. So this is the first one that they've done with two Tele pickups with a Tele bridge.
That's cool.
So if you're looking for an alternative to a Tele, I'm just going to check pricing.
Right, well, whilst you do that, because we are coming up to the end.
There's one more guitar I really want to talk about. $729, by the way. And it will be very, I suspect, that's some stiff competition for other Teles that are out there at a similar price. But we'll try and get one so we can test it. The last guitar they released is another signature model. This is the, let me just find the guy's name, Rick Vito. I think you'll be into this, Joe, because it's very much along the line of the kind of retro guitars that you like from like Echo and
I'm
that
into
kind of
this
strange 60s guitar.
So this is very cool.
This is like a kind of Les Paul style, but it looks like a kind of catalog guitar kind of vibe. And it's perloid top, which is always interesting. Gives it that kind of, again,
do you remember Italia?
It looks like an Italia. Absolutely that. So
the body shape reminds me of that as well, because it's sort of a Les Paul shape, but with the lower horn being very minimal.
Yes, indeed. So Bigsby Trem. Pickups on there look really odd. So pair of humbuckers. It doesn't actually say what they are, but they don't look like traditional humbuckers. They've got a kind of strange design on them, but very much what people would used to call a singer's guitar, in that it's very flashy. You've got like checkerboard binding as well. Very much like those kind of Echo and guitars and stuff like that. And I think that's cool. Do you know what, Reverend, for me, they're just releasing stuff that is going to be good quality, whereas in the past something like Italia always looked kind of cool, but for me, the playability was never there. Reverend are coming in and doing some odd stuff, but the playability is going to be absolutely top-notch.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they are super cool. There are a couple more things I do want to get in before we move over onto our Patreon episode. Jay, I'd love to know more about the Ibanez Tube Screamers, their collaboration with Vemurum.
Okay, well, I didn't get a chance to look at any of that
whilst
I was away, so I'm afraid I can't talk to you about it.
No, okay, fine. Well, I tell you what, I'll talk about those over on the Patreon episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. Do you think we should, just before we go, talk a little bit about the
Acoustasonic? Is that what you're hesitating over?
That is exactly. Well, I almost called it what I've called it in our document, and I realised I shouldn't call it that.
Probably not. Yeah. No, probably not.
Why don't you tell about this innovative idea from Fender.
Okay, so the Acoustasonic, the American Acoustasonic Telecaster.
Ryan thinks it looks like pancakes.
Ryan does think it looks like pancakes. So I showed, so Ryan from 60 Cycle Hum was one of the first people to see this, and also one of the first people to get a video up about this guitar. And yeah, his video just consists of him saying it looks like pancakes and then showing a picture of pancakes rolling past the promo image of the guitar. And I showed that to a couple of people who work at Fender, and everyone thought it was funny. So it's, you know, it's...
And that's why Jay's been fired. They're like, you know this guy, don't you? You're fired.
All publicity is good publicity, right?
Sure.
Anyway, so I think there would been... So the American Acoustasonic Telecaster is basically a Corona made. So it's made in the Corona factory. It's got its own kind of separate area where they make it. And what it is it's a small-bodied acoustic guitar that looks like a telly, kind of. It's got that kind of quirky cutaway there with... both a mixture of acoustic and electric pickups in it. Right. And you're able to blend between them, and it's all like extremely innovative. Dang, I tell you what, in all seriousness, to do it justice, we should get Danny G back
on
to talk about it. Because he spent literally an entire week doing nothing but talking about this guitar.
When I saw this guitar, it did remind me very much of a similar sort of thing that another company... made. And right. Would I be right in thinking it's the same designer behind the Taylor T5?
Yeah, so Brian Swerdeferger, he was one of the designers at Taylor, and he now works for Fender. And yeah, he basically designed both guitars.
Why isn't this called the Fender Swerdeferger?
I mean, that would have been a cool...
It's an absolutely fantastic name.
So, yeah, it's mad. It's mad. Like, when I was really skeptical of it, because I thought, okay, well, this is kind of a bit of a...
They've done this before.
When I first saw it, I was like, okay, we'll see. But then, honestly, when we first got one in, which was a couple of months ago, maybe 3 months ago.
We remember the sort of people that bought Telecoustics.
Well, exactly. But when the first time I plugged it in, Stratacoustics. I was like, oh, this is actually very, very good. Right. It really genuinely surprising how good it is.
Finished very well.
It's amazing. And I tell you what, I think we were kind of, we thought, well, this is going to go one of two ways. This is either going to be a... absolutely incredible
success. Of course it's having mixed feedback at the price it is.
Totally.
Well.
But in general, I think that it's been overwhelmingly positive. It's definitely taken us by surprise how positive it's been. We've like oversold what we expected to. And because it's made in the Corona factory, the capacity for building them is like they can only make a certain amount a day.
Yeah.
It's not very many. And I couldn't believe the reception it had. Like that Andersons video. So Andersons were the first people to do a video on it.
Right.
That Andersons video had 250,000 views in 2 days.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable how across the spectrum, how well received this has been. And not only that, there's five models that are the kind of, you know, quote unquote hero colors that are on display. But at NAMM there were also some kind of other sort of showcase pieces that were showing off, well, this is what potentially we can do. And there were people saying like, yeah, I want that one with the American flag on it. Can I buy that? And it was like, well,
I saw that.
Yeah. It was like, well, no, it's kind of just, that's there to show off what we can do at some point. And people were like, no, I want to buy it right now. Let me buy it. And it's like, oh, okay. So I think it certainly had the reception had more than the reception that was desired of it. And like I say, we should get Danny G on here. Maybe if there's a day that Matt can't make it or something, because I don't think Matt's back next week.
He's not. Well, that's we'll give DG a chance.
He's been a real champion of it since it was first announced. And it's really interesting. It's a really interesting product. And honestly, it's taken me by surprise at just how popular it's been.
Yeah.
So excited to see what happens with it.
Cool. Sweet. Well, that is is it for us here on the regular episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. We'll be continuing over on our Patreon where...
So much we didn't get around to talking
about. I know,
which,
and then that's what we're going to talk about on our Patreon. I would like to talk about the new Squire Classic Vibe, some really interesting models there. We'll be talking about...
Can we do something that isn't Fender?
Yes, we will also do that. We're going to be talking about Equits guitars. We're going to be talking about T1
Equits,
picks.
You mean?
Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah, okay.
We'll be talking about T1 picks. We're going to be talking about Chase Bliss and Chase Bliss's collaboration with Knobs on their new blooper. We're going to talk about Strymon, and we're also going to spend some time looking through the selection of guitars owned by Dave Gilmour that are on auction currently on the Christie's website. So, join us over on the Patreon for that, where from as little as $1 a month, you can support the podcast. $1 gets you the regular episode ad-free and early. $5 gets you the Patreon episode and Branton's Brands, plus loads of other mini-series. And at $10, you become an executive producer and you get your name read out by me. Well, is it one breath anymore? I mean, I've failed now. I'm out.
Listen. I think
this is what they paid for.
This is a cop out.
How is it a cop out? So we were doing it until I lost.
Believe it or not, I actually listened to last week's podcast because I was away and I had nothing better to do at one point.
Yeah.
And you said at the end, oh, I tried to read out everyone who has ever been a top tier backer, which First of all, I disagree with, because those people have made their choice and they have decided that they don't want their name read out anymore. And so therefore, you shouldn't have been reading their name out. And secondly, I don't agree. Of course, you were never going to make that. So I think you set that up for yourself to fail.
Right.
So that you wouldn't have to carry on. So
you want me to carry on?
Yes. That's correct.
Are we ready?
Fine.
I haven't got a song for this week.
I've got one. I've got one.
Okay. Wait. Jay, he's loading something up on his phone. It's a thing. He's looking at stuff. This is a man looks at his phone on the internet while another man talks about it.
It's coming.
He's thinking about it. What's the song?
There's an ad.
This is all going incredibly wrong.
I'm just going to start.
Wait, you ready? It looks like... Wait.
He's thinking about it. Don't turn the podcast off.
It looks like pancakes.
Aaron Sermon, Adam Royce Chris, Adrian Day, Andrew Goody, Andy McKenzie, Blair Toms, Brad Page, Carlos Manta, Christoph Rapsit, Christopher Morgan Cupperson, Christopher Lawsett, Colin Anderson, Dave Lee, Derek Witt, DJ Marcos, Duncan Watson, Emery James Baker, Ernie Cooper, Hans Arms, Jake Gray, Jamie Kemp, Juan Currier, Ken Sayers, Chris Connors, Laurie Onstis, Martin Cliff, Matt Bellamy, Matt Roberts, Matthew King, Moo Kravitz, Nate Nagel, Paul Corrigan, Phil Thompson, Rob Crow, Rod Nordwick, Rob Gard, Robert Cousins, Robin Smith, Ross Edwards, Scott O'Brien, Scott something, Scott Hamilton, Scott Kennedy, Sean Arvo, Stephen N, Steve Markle, Stuart Tate, Blake Wyman, Tucker Everton, Will Clare!
So I like how you haven't moved Blake from...
Oh, I didn't, yeah.
You didn't move...
I didn't move him out of the T's.
Yes,
because he was there as tone mob. I need to move. I'll adjust that for next week.
I also would like to once again put forth my dislike of the fact that you've got the names in alphabetical order now.
There's no way of getting back the other way.
I think we just put them into Google Randomizer.
All right, fine. I'll do a random.
Still comes up last.
Fine. Anyway, that's it for us this week. We'll see you next week. Farewell.
Cheers, gang.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.